Welcome
to WrestleWolf. This is episode 2, but not really, of our AEW rap show. Let's just get into it, I reckon. There's no need to fuck around. I'm the host, Damian Gibson. I'm a wrestling fan, also a wrestling journalist. Do I need any more credentials than that? Not really. I'm a published writer, so I do kind of look at things from a story standpoint as well. But in reality, this is just like, hey, you watch the TV shows, you want to hear someone else talk about it. I don't think there really are any podcasts like that out there that aren't actually trying to systematically dismantle AEW or just try and take the hottest of hot takes. I will try and be relatively level-headed, but also try and be entertaining at the same time. So let's just get into it. We started Dynamite this week with Jay White being interviewed outside by Renee. Rated FTR come in for the save after the Death Riders appear to attack Jay White. This all moves into the arena. Claudio swings Dax into a barrier. Mox and Claudio beat down Jay. Cope is in there as well. He goes to... they run off the Death Riders. Cope grabs the microphone, goes to speak to Mox. Before that, Cope goes to spear Mox. Claudio takes the bullet for Moxley. Cope calls out Mox for the heavyweight title. Mox says no. Jay White grabs the microphone and says, well, what about a street fight in Brisbane? Jay and Cope versus Max and Claudio. This has been announced for Grand Slam Australia. I thought this segment was a 7.5 out of 10. It's better. I kind of felt like I gave everything a tick last week except anything to do with the Death Riders. It's probably a little bit more the same this week. I don't want to... There seems to be a lot of Jon Moxley Death Riding bashing going on at the moment for the sake of it. And I see a lot of reasons like, it's boring, it's the same thing every week. Television in general is, if you boil it down to its bones, is the same thing every week. You know, I mean, a police procedural is called a procedural because it goes through the procedure of police work every week. A wrestling show is exactly the same. You are going to have matches and you're going to have promos. It's going to be the same thing every week. It's just how you do it and the meaning behind it, whether people care about those promos and matches. And at the moment, people don't care enough about the Death Riders because, as I was saying last week, there's no motivation. Now, this is giving some motivation, right? I didn't mind this. I thought it was, you know, you're out in the car park, so that's different. It's not just people running into the ring, beating them down, running off again. It did end that way, almost, and then we got some mic work at the end of it. You don't need to see Mox and the Death Riders beat down people all the time. I would actually, if you're looking to make them scary, you take a leaf out of the book of, like, Jaws. So you don't see them beat down people all the time, because eventually it would get to the point where they just have to show up and people know that this is serious, and they probably shouldn't say anything or get in the way of the Death Riders, otherwise they'll get killed. I was just watching an old episode of Star Wars Rebels where the new young... I'm still getting used to the name, so... But the two young Jedis who are part of this little rebellion group come across Darth Vader for the first time, and nothing is said. He walks out to confront them. Nothing is said. The Imperial Death March plays in the background. He doesn't say he's Darth Vader. They don't go, oh my god, it's Darth Vader. Everybody knows that the look on the face of the young Jedi, they are petrified, and that is how this story should be told. You know, if that's what you're trying to get across with the Death Riders, that they are all conquering, all evil, all bad. But that's not really the story that Mox is trying to tell. Mox is trying to tell this story of, like, he is the only true badass in AEW. He's the only one who can take the company to the promised land because he knows how to, I don't know, wrestle death matches. And everybody else in the company is just there for money. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad angle either, but then you're a face. like you're a face who represents AEW really well, if that's your motivation. So there's a lot of confusion going on here. And then as much as I'm happy to see Jay White in the main event picture, Jay White should not be a face. You know, I know there's a school of thought of like, well, if you bring someone new in, you build them up as a face as everybody gets to know them and then turn them heel to really build that heat. But Jay White's so good as a heel, man. I mean, he single-handedly carried New Japan basically through the pandemic on promos that he cut as a heel. He got me super excited about New Japan again just on the back of his promos. And yes, we're seeing more of him, but you know, you've got to play to these guys' strengths. Anyway, there was some, it was good to see that Mox and whoever is doing the creative for the Death Riders stuff took some feedback on board. And this match, you know, I'm going to get to see this match at Grand Slam Australia. I'm looking forward to this match. I mean, to see Adam Copeland live, I didn't think I would ever get to see that. So, I was kind of hoping that Bryan Danielson would be at the show. Adam Copeland and hopefully maybe Christian would probably make up for that for me with the, you know, Mount Rushmore of my wrestlers. My Mount Rushmore, I'd probably have Bryan Danielson, Bret Hart, maybe Edge and Christian as a tag team up there. They're definitely guys that I loved in specific eras, the kind of, you know, Hart kind of hands over to Christian and Cage and Christian and Edge. Christian Edge kind of hand over to Bryan Danielson and he who will be not be named, Phil Hairplugs. Anyway, if there wasn't this Death Rider, if the Death Riders were just a group, if this was just John Moxley being a prick, I don't think people would be so upset about it. I think the problem is that there was essentially a end goal to all of this was teased and they still haven't come up with one 4 or 5 months later. You know, and if you think that you have, if Mox thinks that he's given us an answer through the 20-minute promo with Renee, you didn't. You gave us a slight motivation of like you want to leave AEW in a better place than what you found it. You want to build 1,000 Moxleys to leave in your place. Again, they're the motivations of a goodie, not a baddie. So when you go around and beat everybody up on the roster, what you're showing the audience, a wrestling watching audience who's been watching pro wrestling for 60, 70 years on TV, that visual language means bad guy. But what you're saying equals good guy. So it's very confusing. And then there's meant to be this mysterious end goal and it never happened. Sometimes, you know, we all know the Shane O'Mac. There were rumors of Shane O'Mac coming in and he, you know, that maybe he was going to be in charge of this group or whatever. That's not going to happen. People aren't enjoying this. You know, AEW is showing up and doing Dynamite in front of crowds of 3,000 people. Meanwhile, the Distinguished Competition are doing 11, 12,000 fucking seat arenas. Their numbers have dropped in the last 12 months by 2 or 3K, but still well outselling AEW by four times as much each week. And doing the same tired stuff in the main event spots every week when people are legitimately, you know, it seems to be a pretty heavy consensus that no one's really enjoying this that much. Might be time to move on to something else. I have been a big one in all the promotions that I followed that youth is the way. People don't really want to see old men wrestling. I've never really enjoyed watching old men wrestle. When you think about what's worked for WWE, when, you know, all the old guys went across to WCW, they had to invest in young people. Shawn Michaels, Triple H, The Undertaker, Mankind. That became Stone Cold. That became the Attitude Era. AEW at the beginning of their run, everyone was super young. You know, for the first 2 or 3 years of the company, there was exponential growth. You know, ECW the same when they first started, young, hungry roster. You know, and I think the way that you can fix this slump that AEW is going through at the moment, even though things are slightly picking up for them again the last couple of months, is you invest in the youth that you went and spent good money on from Japan. Jay White, Will Ospreay. Okada's not a young man, but you know, you would put Okada in there as well. But to me, it's quite strange that they've gone and got Okada and then sort of stuck him at the top of the mid card. I know there's a level of thought of, well, you know, he's from Japan, not everyone's going to know him, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I suppose what I'm saying is it's time, I think, and as we find out later on Collision, Cope challenges Mox to the heavyweight match again, a revolution in LA, and the match has been accepted. I don't expect Cope to win that. I expect Mox to be a champion for God knows how long. And hopefully they find the beats along the way. Hopefully a story comes out of it somehow. I think the story they're waiting to tell is Darby Allin to come back and win the heavyweight championship off Mox, which I think is completely the wrong... I think it's a completely wrong... Like, I just think that would be the wrong lever. I don't see Darby as a heavyweight champion. Yeah. I mean, but I'm also at the point where it's like, well, anything. Let's try anything to get the belt off Mox and try something different. You know, there are positives. We've seen Jay White move into the heavyweight picture, into the main event picture. We've seen Big Will Hobbs move into the main event picture a little bit. So there are the younger guys being groomed into the top spots here, and that's good. But yeah, I'm getting that feeling that I did with CM Punk about the death row. It's not in the sense that I think they're going to tear the company apart. Far from it, probably the opposite backstage. But on screen, I think it's really doing damage to the brand. A lot of this stuff that gets talked about in the dirt sheets, I think, is just utter bullshit. It just gets made up, and then, you know, whoever's come up with it, Sportskeeda or Wrestling News Inc. or whatever, comes up with the dot points of how to attack AEW this week, and then everyone just, you know, uses those dot points. With the Death Rider story stuff, I think this is legit. I think it's probably turning people off the product a little bit. I haven't seen the ratings numbers. I would be interested in getting those off Brian and Dave. They seem to usually have those. I'd be interested to see what the wrestling figures have been on Max since January full stop, if that's even... I mean, I'm sure it definitely would be kept, but whether it's published anywhere, that would be really interesting to find out. I might try and find that out for next episode. Anyway, next up we had Will Ospreay versus Mark Davis. I thought this was actually kind of using the whole Buffalo, you know, like Mark Davis is around, hadn't really thought about him. The Callis family had been teasing a new member for a while. There is a little bit of AW cock teasing going on here of like, oh, who could it be? It could be anybody. It could be da da da. And it turns out to be Mark Davis. But as soon as my initial thing was like, ah, Mark Davis. But he's turned heel. He wants to kill Ospreay. Don Callis has got into his head. It's actually a pretty great story beat that Callis signed Aussie Open. And this is what you do when you can, like, this is how you can tell a story, because a lot of the time, like I was saying last week, the stories are already there. So Don Callis signed Aussie Open in kayfabe when they both came across from New Japan, and Don still has Mark Davis under contract. So essentially he's gone to Mark Davis and said, listen, you can keep showing up here all you want. I own you. Like, you have a contract with the Callis family to wrestle here under the Callis family. There's some good wrestling here, and then Don gets involved as Will tries to get the pin. It was a brutal-looking pile driver from Davis, hidden play for Will to get the win. Will jumps on the mic. He says he's got a mate who wants to come and see Don. Kenny's music hits. He's saying to the crowd, Carl. Kenny's saying to the crowd, it's nice to see them. Carl and Takeshi come down. Kenny essentially tells them to fuck off. This match and the segment combined, 9 out of 10, got me nice and excited for the matches at Brisbane Down Under. Brisbane Down Under Grand Slam at Brisbane Down Under. And there is a real excitement around the Will Ospreay, Kenny Omega versus the Callis family. And it's interesting to see these two stories back to back. Because essentially the same thing is being done here. There's a dominant heel faction, and you've got some good guys teaming up to try and take them down, even though they don't necessarily like each other that much. And it's just being done with so much more charisma and panache with the Kenny and Will stuff. I mean, there have been a couple of moments that were like, oh, but for the most part, there are actual story beats going there. Every week, the story moves along somewhat. You know, so this week, Mark Davis has joined the Don Callis family, so that's a slightly more dangerous Callis family that Will and Kenny have to deal with. Mark Davis is Australian, so he's most likely going to be in Australia. You know, does that make it even more dangerous to have Mark Davis in Kyle Fletcher's corner for that match? Yes, absolutely. Meanwhile, you know, with the Jay White and Cope versus Death Riders match, there isn't what happened this week. Like, the match got called, but why? You know, like, why was this match happening? Well, you know, I mean, Jay White got jumped in the car park. That's what's been happening with the Death Riders every week for 4 months. And again, like, I'm not going to go round and round in circles. I think it's just because the motivations of the characters in the story are confused. You need to be more black and white and crystal clear about what the motivations of the Death Riders are, and I think people will get on board pretty quickly. Swerve and Ricochet video promo, 6.5 out of 10. That's for the match later on in the show. Hurt Syndicate promo, great promo. The Guns return. They do really well. Challenge next week. There's a championship match on Dynamite. Both teams looked really strong here. Really happy to see the Guns back. I can't believe how much I've changed my mind. When me and Matt used to talk about this show during the lockdowns, we hated the Guns so much. They have really become a star team in AEW, and they're absolutely a team that WWE would look at, I think. I think they're good in ring. They're very good on the mic. Austin, I think, is a lot better than Colton, but on the mic, I think they're both really good in ring. But anyway, I'm looking forward to that match. I think it's going to be really great. Harley and Mercedes promo, another great promo. Harley's doing the puppet gimmick. Mercedes shows up and says, "You can't ride on the money train." Harley gives Mercedes the finger. 7.5 out of 10. There's now a Hangman promo. Renee asks Hangman about retiring Christopher Daniels. Hangman says, "No, I'm not going to talk about that." Max Caster asks Hangman to hurry up. So Max Caster's sitting to the side, and he just out of nowhere goes, "Oh, hurry up, man. I've got a promo to cut." Hangman gets very angry. Max asks Hangman to kill Bowens or Daddy Ass rather than him. Hangman says he doesn't see them there, but he does see Caster, and then chases him around the building. 7.5 out of 10. Hands of Hell versus Fletcher and Takeshita. Really great match, especially between Buddy and Kyle when those guys bumped uglies in the in the ring. Rainmaker's music hits for a distraction. Takeshita hits a senton bomb save that was just stupendous. Callis family gets the win. 8.5 out of 10 here. I really like this. Christian Cage promo. Joe and Hook go and pay a visit to Christian Cage's locker room. They beat down the boys in Kip Sabian and I knew I was going to blank. I always blank on that kid's name. Anyway, Christian's son. Christian does some great comedic work here. 7.5 out of 10. MJF promo. MJF keeps trying to cut a promo. It keeps getting interrupted. Max Caster comes out looking for a friend. MJF tells him to fuck off. Hangman comes through and chases Max out of the ring. Dustin Rhodes comes out. It cuts a pretty fantastic promo. MJF teases Dustin about his dad and his brother, and a brawl breaks out. MJF and Daniels confrontation. So Christopher Daniels comes out. MJF gets in his face. Hangman did a number on you, old man. I thought that was really good because MJF went to hit Daniels, and Daniels like shrieked away from it. 8 out of 10. Queen Aminata versus Mariah May. Tony Storm comes out as Mariah May. Good match. Nice promo. 7.2 out of 10. for the match. New York Minute with Chris Jericho. Powerhouse Hob goes after Big Bell. Brawl leaves the learning tree, being ejected from the building. 6 out of 10. And then we have the main event, Swerve versus Ricochet. Ricochet hits the Swerve with a chair before the match starts. Hits Swerve 3 times with the chair. It's a match of 2 halves here. Swerve hard-hitting first half of the match. Ricochet high-flying off the top rope in the second match. The second half of the match, getting all the offense in. Ricochet gets the win. Surprise booking, but good booking. Means more to end the show on a win that's been happening than what's been happening with Mox the last 3 months. So I'm not going to bang on about the Death Riders again, but I would highlight this as an example of what I think should happen at the end of every TV show. You need to tell a part of your story, and it needs to be a major part. So Ricochet beating Swerve Strickland, there's some heel stuff going on there, but he has beaten Swerve at the end of Dynamite when no one expected it. That pushes the story along more than anything else. What does that mean now? What does that mean? Does it mean Ricochet's in the heavyweight title picture, beating an ex-heavyweight champion? What does it mean for Swerve? Like, you know, I'm going to watch it every week no matter what, but that's the kind of thing that will get people interested. You know, the littler guy won the match here. The crowd seemed confused. What's going on? Like, that's interesting. That is interesting. And for the Rusted On fans, it's something interesting as well, because it means that every match in AEW matters. It needs to be believable, and this is. Ricochet beating Swerve is believable, especially when he's being heelish. But it can happen. That, you know, you don't do it in every single match, but you can definitely do it every now and then to keep people on their toes. So it's like, well, I've got to watch the main event, because even though I think I know what the booking's going to be, I don't. I never really know until the match is done. We move to the 9th of February collision. We start with Mox. He says he'll take on Cope and Jay White in Brisbane, so he's accepted the challenge, even though the match had already been announced on social media. That's very AEW way of doing things. Garcia, Daddy Cool, Cool Hand Luke, Daddy Cool. Is it Daddy? No, Daddy Magic. Versus the Undisputed Era and Shane Taylor Promotions. Shane Taylor's beating down a whole bunch of people in this match. Adam Cole gets a couple of near falls. There's a big brawl in the middle of the match. Undisputed Era chops down Shane Taylor, the three of them. Adam Cole eventually gets the win, stares at Danny Garcia. The Death Riders appear. Undisputed Era chase them off and challenge Death Riders to the trio belts. Now, again, the Death Riders, there is some motivation here, because they cut a promo in a little bit saying they see the Undisputed Era as finally some competition for the belts. But again, they don't carry them around. I think this attitude of Moxley's and everybody in this faction of like, it's a gimmick, you know, belt's a gimmick, it doesn't actually mean anything, people shouldn't be wrestling for those, they should be wrestling for the love of the game, blah, blah. The belt isn't about the wrestlers, it's about the audience. It tells the audience, oh, this is someone important, this is someone I should pay attention to. And I know Moxley's argument might be, you know, if we're having a creating discussion, it's like, well, I'm John Moxley, I'm the one whose face is on all the posters, people don't need to, but you're not just, you know, there's an old saying that you got to play to the back of the audience, you got to sing or speak to the back of the audience in theater, you got to speak to the back of the audience or project to the back of the audience. And when you're doing a wrestling show or writing for any audience, you've got to do the same thing. You've got to be writing or pitching or performing so that if anyone was to just come in off the street, they're engaged, they're intrigued, they know what's happening, why, and they're curious. You want the audience to be curious about what's next, why is this happening? And if they just keep seeing 4 or 5 people in skinny jeans and white t-shirts jumping into the ring and beating down anyone who seems half interesting, people are going to get pretty bored of that pretty quickly. Anyway, it was nice to see the trios wearing the belt. It was nice to see them, the Death Riders wearing the trio belts. I'm sorry. It was nice to see them talk about it. Because again, you know, you got to build up the belts. If you never show them, who cares? Anyway, 7.2 out of 10 for this. FTR tag team promo. This was a video promo. Talks about how great a tag team they are and that they're going after the belts. More promos like this, please. Just more. More like this, explaining who they are, what their motivations are, and that you're going to be seeing more of them soon. Do you like these guys? Cool, because if you keep watching, you'll get to see more of them. 8 out of 10. Platinum Max Caster promo, best wrestler alive, open challenge on Dynamite, tells us open challenge, yeah, on Dynamite, and tells us that we should watch next week. I think what my notes are trying to tell me is that Max Caster is still doing his open challenge, and that will be happening this week on Dynamite. And then what I'm also saying to myself is this is another good gimmick that tells the audience why they should watch Dynamite next week. Do you like Max Caster? Yes? Great. Well, he's going to be wrestling next week, and you don't know who he's going to be wrestling against. Could be anybody. To me, that's super exciting. That's something that should be promoted all the time. The reason why everyone loves Jaws is because you don't get to see the shark. Right? It's the same thing. It's the same concept of a story. You know, people are fascinated with what they can't see, what they don't know. Like, that's much more interesting than what they do know. That's why the Royal Rumble is not as good as it used to be, because they tell you everyone that's going to be in it. And a lot of the time tell you the fucking order they're going to come out in as well. Like, that's not the fun of the Royal Rumble. The fun of the Royal Rumble is that, and then hearing, oh my God, it's blah, blah. Anyway, we're not talking about WWE. Bandito versus Brian Keith was a hard-hitting start. 10 paces Mexican standoff was great. I've never seen that before. Bandito gets the win in a great match. 8 out of 10 for this. I really, really enjoyed this match a lot. It was one of those typical AEW matches where you see, I'll be really honest, you see Bandito versus Brian Keith on the card, and I just thought, oh God, I only get a finite amount of time on this earth. Do I really want to spend it watching Brian Keith versus Bandito? The answer is yes. I forgot how good both of these guys are in the ring. This was a fantastic match. Powerhouse Hobbs is still around, even though he's injured, but he's still around the stadium for some reason. And he's looking for Big Bill when he gets back. LFI versus Aries, Jay Alexander, and Rick Savage. LFI win a squash match. Beat down the other team. Commander comes in for the save, gets beaten down. And then Hologram returns. Some amazing moves from Hologram. He and Commander fight off to the backstage area while Rush has got a chair and is going after the ref with a chair for some reason. Two other refs come down to stop him. Rush shugs them off and knocks out Paul Tanner with a chair. The chair shot was... didn't knock him out with a chair. It knocked him out with an elbow. But the elbow shot looked legit. Paul Tanner took an amazing bump. 8.5 out of 10. This was crazy and all over the place, but reminded me of why we love AEW. That, like, oh yeah, Hologram, fuck, another talented wrestler on this roster who can do things I've never seen other wrestlers do. He reminds me very much of when WCW debuted Rey Mysterio, and they just had something that WWE didn't have. And Hologram is that. Great. And I mean, Command, Hologram is so good. He makes Commander just look like a run of the mill, you know, like a guy who's just running the ropes, which is not the case at all. Commander's a fantastic rope wrestler, but Hologram is next level. Lexi is trying to get a word with Megan Bale. She wanted to talk to her. All Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa tries to talk to Megan Bale. She walks off. Harley Cameron is now doing her halftime show. Starts singing a song called Money Train, which she had actually sung once before. Her guitar is very out of tune here. This is one of those like autistic things I'm autistic, and I just could not. I couldn't get past how out of tune the guitar was, and she was literally doing everything she could to work around it. Like she tried to mute the chords for a bit, and then she moved to power chords, and then she was literally just essentially completely muting the sound and just hitting the strings. So it was like a hung sound. So she could just sing. So no diss on Harley or Mercedes in this promo, but that just, you know, I know if Matt was still doing the podcast and, you know, I did talk to him most of the week about wrestling, these are the things that he constantly brings up. Let's start calling Matt the silent co-host. These are the things that he brings up with me all the time, of like the difference between AEW and WWE is that guitar would be fucking tuned and then tuned again and tuned again. Like there would be someone there making sure that guitar is fucking in tune so this stuff doesn't happen. Because this is, you're trying to build someone up to wrestle Mercedes Money, and it's the kind of stuff that professionals get pissed off at. So I'm not saying this has happened, but I could picture a world where Mercedes Money is backstage waiting to come out and she sees this is happening and feels bad for Harley, but also is like, what the fuck am I doing here? What am I doing here? They can't even tune a guitar. That's no matter how much love I had for AEW, I think after a while, when these little things are constantly happening, you would get frustrated. Anyway, the crowd are totally up for Harley. Mercedes says, you're not on my level. Harley says, you're right. She's new to this, but she would love nothing more than to face Mercedes in Brisbane. She says Mercedes' best performance was when Harley had her hand up her ass, meaning her puppet. The crowd goes crazy. Mercedes slaps Harley. Harley pins Mercedes with a mic. And then Mercedes, of course, turns around straight away and gives her the match in Brisbane. 7.7 out of 10. This was good. Just the guitar. If the guitar was tuned, I probably would have given it a much higher score, to be honest. Buddy and Okada face-to-face interview. Buddy is getting better at promos. Still fluffs his lines every now and then, but 1,000 times better than he was before he got to AEW. Okada is angry for Buddy, making him look like a fool after Buddy goes to hit him and Okada flinches. This is a new AEW thing where people go to punch the other one, they flinch, and then they say something like, bitch. 6.5 out of 10. Promo wasn't long enough to get going, so not bad, but, you know, nothing really there. Dustin Rhodes promo. This is probably the other thing I'm going to bitch about a little bit besides the Death Riders. As much as Max may want to wrestle legends before they retire, it makes for pretty shitty wrestling TV. And I think it makes AEW look lame to have old has-beens on the show. I know that's really harsh. Dustin Rhodes, Jeff Jarrett, I even would put like Samoa Joe in this category. I wouldn't put Chris Jericho in that category yet. Last week I was talking about how he's still a draw. Christian and Adam Copeland are still draws. But for the most part, I mean, Jeff Jarrett and Dustin Rhodes in particular, I just feel like these guys have been given every opportunity under the sun. And like, AEW aren't booking them in main events, like they're being used in the mid-card and stuff. But I don't want to see the company's best heel doing stuff with Dustin Rhodes. Like, it's a waste of all of our time. We know that Dustin Rhodes isn't going to beat MJF. I just think it really stinks up the brand. I think it really stinks up the brand to see sort of old has-been when you could have Max Caster in that spot. You know what I mean? Yeah, there are. I'd rather see Kip Sabian. I'd rather see Nick Wayne. I'd rather see a 21-year-old in the ring with Max, you know, having these promo battles so they can learn off Max, and then, you know, maybe something catches fire. That's how you end up with The Rock. You don't end up with The Rock by just booking the same 25-year-old veteran week after week after week. Thunder Rosa versus Penelope Ford. Really good wrestling match where Ford showed a fair bit in this match. Thunder gets the win. Megan Bale comes out and then kills Thunder Rosa. It looked fantastic. 8.1 out of 10 for this. Mariah May's glamorous exhibition match. She's got her opponent to dress up like Tony Storm and then squashes her, which I've never really seen before. That was fun. Puts Tony makeup on this girl. Luther comes out with a shoe, with the shoe of treachery on a platter. Mariah May tells Luther to go away. When she comes back, she pulls the jobber up by the hair, and it's actual Tony Storm. She beats down Mariah, who runs out via the crowd. This was a lot of fun. Really good promo. 8 out of 10. Don Callis' family are backstage. They're beating down everyone. Lance Archer said something to the camera. I wasn't really paying any attention. 4 out of 10. And then Kyle Fletcher versus Mark Briscoe. Actually, Lance Archer is another one of the people I'm talking about as well. Been around for 15, 20 years. AEW's been trying to make him a thing, kind of, for 6 years. I've never once heard anyone say, you know who I'm really looking forward to seeing? Lance Archer. Kyle Fletcher versus Mark Briscoe. Kyle gets the early offense. Mark Briscoe was another one of these guys that I was going to put in this basket. And before I do, Kyle looks even better again this week. He looks fitter and fitter every week. And I've written down here, Mark Briscoe should not be in the main event of your TV show. And then as the match goes on, I start writing notes down. Like, however, I will say this. You do believe the kickouts in a Briscoe match. Falls out of the ring with Briscoe. Oh, so Kyle and Briscoe fall out of the ring. Kyle Fletcher takes a huge bump, which is bump of the year. Briscoe came to do a sort of like a leaping axe handle off the apron, and Kyle Fletcher jumped up and backwards as Briscoe was making contact. It just made the bump look so much better as they crashed through a table. The table crushed, like just crumpled really crisply. It sounded great. It looked great. No one's paying attention to the fact that Kyle's kind of jumped an extra meter or so off the ground as the spot's happening. I mean, you can tell that it's happened because I'm telling you that it's happened. But in the moment, I don't think anyone went, oh, I didn't like that spot because Kyle jumped up on his own. It just looked fantastic. Briscoe gets a 2.5 count after that. There's a brainbuster against the top turnbuckle that looked so brutal from Kyle to Briscoe. Kyle gets the win, cuts a little promo at the end. 8.8 out of 10. So I'm going to keep Briscoe out of the old man trash can for the time being. But yeah. Not a bad episode, actually. Collision the last couple of weeks. A lot of 7.5s and 8s. Dynamite a bit sort of bit more all over the place. I think that comes down to there being a bit more of the Death Riders, which is just really slowing everything down. Before I finish up, last week I was talking about how it looked likely that Kevin Owens was going to come to AEW. I was very, very wrong. He signed a 5-year extension with WWE again. As an AEW fan, that's very frustrating news to hear. I think Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are the kind of people I would spend Roman Reigns money to get Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn out of WWE and into AEW. It's very obvious to me that they're getting paid well. They wouldn't be at the top end of the tree. I think Kevin and Sammy have a relationship with Hunter, and I think that also helps as well. I think if Vince was still booking the show, both of them probably would have left by now. But Hunter is especially with that generation, the next generation, and you're already starting to see it with like the next level of NXT guys that came through, doesn't have the same relationship with them that he does with like Finn, Kevin, Sami Zayn, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns. He brought all these guys up. Mox is another one of those guys, although I couldn't see Mox going back to WWE. Adam Cole is another one of those guys. Malakai Black is another one. Then the next, Keith Lee, Dovid Dukovic or whatever his name was. trying to think of guys who were like in the title picture just after that in NXT. I mean, Karrion Kross seems to be a Hunter guy. He seems to be into it. The next batch are Sean's guys, right? And Sean and Hunter are besties, but it's not the same thing. So, yeah, it's a shame because you just sort of think that, like, if that Punk money, and that Punk money is still around, and they got Will Ospreay and Jay White and Okada, so I think that's probably a pretty good trade. You know, you lose Punk, you get those three guys in. I would take that trade any day of the week. I think the crowd figures will, once those guys are actually booked in the top spot, you'll start to see the crowd figures reflected on what I see with them as star potential. And, you know, maybe the thought process from Tony is like, listen, there's guys like Gabe Kidd and Zack Sabre Jr. over in New Japan that are just as charismatic and are probably going to get just as many bums on seats as KO or Seth once they're in AEW. But I just think that KO and Seth seem to have, they seem to be very good dudes. They seem to be locker room leaders, you know, and they're big names. They're WWE names, and that helps sell tickets. I just think it's probably worth the investment to get both of them across. But you probably lost the opportunity to do that with Kevin Owens now. I couldn't see Sammy. If Kevin's staying, I couldn't see Sammy leaving either. So, unless something drastic happened there. There was a falling out between Hunter and Sammy, or I don't know. anyway, so I was wrong with that. I'll probably try and stay out of wading into rumors and innuendo. A lot of WWE wrestlers released this week. I actually, for the first time, don't really see many of them going to AEW. If I was Tony Khan, I would probably stop signing, outside of the two guys I just spoke about, I would probably just stop signing guys from WWE. It seems like the vast majority of them use it as a place to park their ass for a couple of years, try and drive their price up, and then go straight back to WWE. Fuck them. Don't let them do that. You know? I think it's probably time for AEW to start having a really good look at who wants to be there and who doesn't. People like MJF, Will Ospreay, Jay White, people who go at WWE wrestlers who have a go at AEW, they're the people that you want there. And the ones that don't, the ones that are constantly threatening to leave and go to WWE. And I was happy to see that this week. Guys like Ricky Starks, Penta, Malachi Black has basically been threatening it the whole time he's been there. And didn't really do much for AEW anyway. Wasn't really booked in singles competition. That's fair, you know, if that was your counter argument, fair. But at the same time, just didn't really feel like he was ever really. Every two or three weeks, I would hear like, oh, Malachi Black's going to go back to WWE. Malachi Black, just let him go. The minute they want to go, Rick, I wouldn't even be holding them to their contract. Just fucking let them go. Let them all go. If there's 30 of them that want to go to WWE, let them go. You know, because as we saw with Gallows and Anderson this week, they could have stayed in AEW that whole time, probably earned the same amount of money, had creative freedom, and actually built their brand, like, and kept their brand fresh and interesting. But then they went back to WWE as AJ Styles' bag boys, and now have been released again for the second time in 4 years. I just don't understand the thought process of a lot of these guys. If you're a guy like Ricky Starks, yeah, okay, you're going to bet on yourself, I'm going to go to the big leagues, you know, Hunter wants me, sees big things for me, blah, blah. I think Ricky Starks is going to go to WWE, and unless he changes his gimmick, he's just going to be seen as like a wannabe rock. But yeah, I mean, if we look at the people who've gone from AEW, besides Cody, the people who've gone from AEW to WWE, none of them have been booked well. Punk's in around the main event picture, but hasn't been given a championship. Cody, you know, it took a while, but was given a championship. He's definitely getting the star treatment now, but I think that is, I don't know how much longer that will go on for, and I think that was definitely used to try and get people back across from AEW. But yeah, like Jade Cargill, nothing's really happened there. You know, fucking Brian Pillman Jr. going to NXT. I haven't really heard much about him and his progress there. Like, you know, WWE are a business. They're going to do things like what big football teams do and sign talent away from AEW to make AEW a weaker promotion. They're going to do that. That's how they roll. So just bear that in mind. Anyway, we'll see what rolls out. Maybe some of those people end up in AEW. If they do, we'll talk about it next week. I'm going to finish it up there. Thanks for listening. Managed to keep the show a couple of minutes shorter than last week. Thanks for listening to AEW Weekly on WrestleWolf. We'll be back next week with another breakdown of Dynamite and Collision. Have a good week, guys.